It's Monday, September 18th, and you're listening to episode 19 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 1 minute. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan, and with me I've got Chad.
Howdy.
Dawn.
Hello.
And Adam.
Yay.
We were talking about the prep that we go through before we do these podcasts. So we have this semi-dysfunctional ritual that we go through. And Adam, do you want to talk about what that is? Because you, Chad, and Dawn, of course, drive up from where you live
30 miles.
Wait a minute.
In a car with these two.
Right. So you guys
are talking about wow.
So you guys
are unlucky woman.
All right, so you guys all pile into Adam's big VW bus with flowers all over it.
Yeah. And no. Before we even get into the car, the dance begins.
Yes.
Over a month ago, we went to a little hole-in-the-wall barbecue place out here in St. Peter's.
It was a shack.
It was a shack. Yeah. And you know what? The barbecue is okay.
It's okay.
It's not the best.
I've had better in St. Louis.
Chad, you know, I hate to interrupt you, but I think something occurred to me. Apparently, I don't trust you sufficiently yet on the mic because you said, and it was a shh, and I'm like, oh, great, I'm going to have to edit this. Hack. Oh, okay, yeah.
I was right there with you. I was like, oh, here it comes.
I thought we were going to hear about how it was a poop hole, and no, okay, it was a shack. That's fine. Please continue.
Well, anyway, it was mediocre barbecue.
Yes.
But
definitely.
Why do we eat there?
It rates to me as edible. It is highly edible.
See, I don't think now if I was to put this like on a scale of 0 to 5 pork chops, I would give it like a 3.5 pork chop.
Dude, I can take it to some places that are 4 and 5. Pork
oh,
chop.
I have no doubt, but I wouldn't rate this as edible.
I don't rate it as edible. I rate it as barbecue with no modifier.
If it's a 1 to 5
There's
pork chop, I rate
it 2.5. I don't know. Just this kind of
it's the meat infusion.
It is a meat. I got green beans today. It had meat in it.
Anyway.
So let's get back to the dance.
Instead of there being a spoken verbal agreement between us about where we're going to eat that day, there's this very subtle beneath the surface dance. I'll come in and I'll make random innocuous comment.
Yes. Just totally
out there.
Yeah.
And you know, just feeling Chad out.
Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, all week long, I've been thinking of this place. Thinking about going there. I don't know why. The barbecue's not that good. And so
This is like dysfunctional alcoric family. Like,
no.
Neither of us can come out and say it.
No, exactly.
Do you want to go to this place? No, you can't say that because we went there the past 5 weeks in a row.
Right. You see, there's this.
We don't want to look insane.
Nobody's admitting you have a problem. There's this like 800-pound gorilla nobody's talking about until you come over here and I serve as the enabler.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happens. In 40 minutes between his apartment and the time we get here, name is never spoken.
Yeah.
But an agreement is made.
Imagine the conversation.
No matter what happens, I always get outvoted.
Imagine the conversation going something like, we both want to eat. This place is called Stumpy's, by the way. Stumpy's Barbecue. We both want to eat at Stumpy's. Neither of us wants to admit to anyone that we want to eat at Stumpy's because it's the fifth time in a row we've eaten there.
You're saying the name now?
It's not that good.
You're saying the name now, and I'm cringing.
I know.
I hear the name from you.
And it's like, Adam comes in, so, I'm kind of hungry. And I'm like, yeah, where are we going to eat today? Well, I don't know.
I don't know. I've been in the mood for something. I can't put my finger on it.
And then imagine that going on for 45 minutes while we drive
and
up and just getting worse and worse.
Oh,
and
there's wow references to it.
Oh, yeah. And they're interspending wow and stuff in there. And then we walk in the door, and we're in the middle of this. We walk in the door, dance place, like, I want to we're not even speaking English anymore. It's like, and Dan's like, barbecue.
Yes. The game is to get Dan to say it first.
Yes. It's usually barbecue again.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't really bother me because since at work I eat out every day, for lunch. So you run out of restaurants pretty quick. I mean, you eat at probably the same places once a week, maybe once every other week. Mm-hmm. And so I'm eating again and again at the same place doesn't bother me unless it's like a daily occurrence. But speaking of work and speaking of food, we've talked about throughout the history of this podcast, things like the gaming environment, you know, the gaming room mm-hmm. and the stupid little table rituals and a lot of the...
They're not stupid.
A lot of the kind of fixtures...
necessary. That's like oxygen. That's necessary.
A lot of the fixtures of the gamer's life. But one of the big ones we've never really talked about is the gaming junk food. At every gaming table, you've always got... And, of course, the generic stereotypical gamer drink is Mountain Dew, which I don't think anyone in our group actually drinks Mountain Dew.
Well, I don't think it's Dr. Pepper fixation.
I don't think it's Mountain Dew anymore. I think it's Mountain Dew for us old geezers, but I think them youngins got the new energy drinks.
Like Red Bull or whatever.
I don't drink energy drinks.
Well, I don't drink Mountain Dew anymore either.
We had Nitro way back when, which was
the
best soda ever made.
Yeah, and I can't find it anymore. I don't think
so. No, they don't make it.
They don't make it anymore.
Actually, there's a story. I heard the story behind why they don't make it. I don't know if this was a Midwest thing. I don't know how far Nitro Cola penetrated throughout America, and I'm pretty sure it didn't get to like Australia or China or Europe or some of our other
the world
are.
Permeation there.
Yeah, I don't think it got that far. I think it was pretty much a Midwest thing, if that. Before the age of like super caffeinated drinks, you know, like the Red Bulls and Monster stuff, you had Mountain Dew, but you didn't have any like caffeine enriched sodas. Well, and then Nitro Cola came out. And then Jolt came out around the same time. Jolt tasted nasty. And
Surge was around the same time.
Yeah, no, and Surge was out of business. Or they didn't make it anymore, or whatever.
Beforehand or afterhand?
Beforehand. I don't know. I don't follow the whole Surge thing.
Surge came later.
Yeah, I'm not part of the cult of Surge. This soda was the best tasting soda you have ever had. It was a cola. And people were like, oh, well, it's just the caffeine and it's caffeine addiction. No, it could be caffeine free. It was the best tasting soda.
And it only
ever.
Came in bottles.
It like only came in bottles.
Glass bottles.
Yeah.
And not plastic bottles. Real glass bottles with a bottle cap. Yep. And
the soda was invented at an old ammunition plant. I mean, it was like
it really?
Bottled. Yeah, at a converted ammunition plant.
Huh.
Well, what it was all the kids were drinking it, and they were getting like really caffeine crazy. So all these school boards and parent-teacher organizations and stuff petitioned the company that was making it to stop making it. And they're like, oh, okay, we will. And then all the other caffeinated sodas like hit the market not long after that. And they couldn't really get rid of all those because there were too many. But that was the end of Nitro.
Yeah, speaking of drinks, though, and what got me thinking about gaming stuff.
Sorry, tangent there, guys. Sorry.
I was driving down a particular street kind of close to my work, for those of you who live in St. Louis. So I was driving down Page near Lindbergh. And there was a big billboard there for gas stations, all these multicolored drinks on it. Do you remember, we used to, before we gamed, like back late high school, early college, we would typically do a run to a grocery store, and we would buy all these cheap, generic gaming junk foods, like bagged popcorn, soda, Totino's pizzas,
Doritos.
Like
excessive amounts of licorice.
Yeah, the Red Bull.
I used to make myself sick on licorice all the time.
And Tim, and it was this billboard got me thinking about this. Tim used to always buy these great big 1 gallon jugs of like 89-cent drink.
Oh, it was orange.
It had no flavor.
It had colors. It wasn't even like the Tampico orange drink or whatever. It was like a recycled milk jug filled with red.
Yeah.
Or blue.
Seriously,
or
if you
look
at the label, it did not say this is like cherry soft drink.
Yeah, didn't say fruit punch. It said
flavor
red.
Flavor green. Flavor blue.
And they all red, green, blue, Roy G. Biv, whatever. If they all had the same flavor, and the flavor was sweet. That was the only flavor.
It was like Kool-Aid minus the Kool-Aid plus food dye.
Minus the cool, if you will.
It was just aid.
I gotta wonder, you know, as we move into the postmodern gaming environment, if eventually the gaming snacks will be replaced by something more healthy.
No.
Lies.
Apple chips and energy water.
Well,
I see you with your bolthouse drink over there.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I mean, it depends on the size of your gut, too, and your age. I don't know. We game, and I don't eat all the crap that we used to eat. You know, the huge pizzas and the huge amounts of chips and the gallons of soda and then the snacks. And, you know, typical 16-year-olds eat like a goat, but...
Well, it just strikes me that a gamer's diet is one of these coincidental things. That, for example, cheerleaders and ditziness. Being a cheerleader and being ditzy has nothing to do with each other. But I know a lot of cheerleaders that certainly a good portion of them were fairly ditzy.
Sir, that is an unfounded, unfair stereotype for the cheerleaders of America.
Here I go. The Cheerleaders Advancement Association is going to be knocking on our door. But
that's right.
What is it with gamers and unhealthy habits? That, for example, gaming does not necessitate eating poorly, never exercising, sitting inside all the time. But for some reason, and I won't say all, I know we get plenty of gamers who are outdoor fanatics. And so, you know, I know this.
Well,
but
no, I'm running through the list.
Actually, look at yourself, Dan. You're skinny as a rail.
Well, right, but that's metabolism. That's not hard work.
Yeah,
you just got lucky.
The rest of us have these guts.
I'm pregnant, too.
Yeah. Yeah, you should see Adam's gut.
Don't make me curse you.
Whoa.
We'll have gut competitions. I got you now, but you know what? You'll take me in a couple months.
If only we had a video log. I'm glad we don't have a video log, because we don't have to answer, put up with, or even mention, except I'm doing it right now, the whole Lonely Girl 15 thing.
What's that?
So,
yeah, I don't understand
the reference. All right, I'll have to explain it now, just because you're asking. It's like, I didn't even... there's a stupid video log that was... I saw one episode of it.
Oh!
And it was like blatantly put out by someone with a really high production value, but it's supposed to be the daily journal of this like girl who sits at home with these stereotypical made-for-Hollywood family where, like, the dad's super religious and overbearing and won't let her do anything. She has this boy who has a crush on her, but she doesn't realize it because she's sheltered, blah, blah. And it's, like, so plainly engineered. And the first time I saw it, that's what I thought. And
you got a lot of downtime at work.
Oh, no, I really don't. The only reason I saw this, because every day, I and one of my coworkers, we check. We don't watch them all, but we just skim real quick on Google videos and YouTube, the top 100 of the day. Just out of curiosity, if there's anything funny out there, like the Juggernaut video or something.
Oh, that gold.
And
the Juggernaut video is not funny.
So I saw one of them, didn't think anything of it. Thought this would just must have been somebody's whatever, you know, just somebody who's doing this for fun, like as a...
Porn teaser?
Well, no, it's like a college project or something.
Sounds like a porn teaser to me.
Well, all right, porn teaser maybe, but college project or film school project or something like that. And now this big thing breaks that she's fake, which was like,
I thought that
first time I saw this.
Liberace's gay?
And apparently all these people, like, it was huge. I mean, like, she had, like, was like the number one most watched thing on YouTube or something. And all these people were following her life and sending her mail and becoming fans of her and supporting her. And they were just all shattered to find out that she's fake. And it was like, I'm glad we don't have crap like this in podcasts. It's not that I know of. Maybe this is just my sheltered life that I haven't heard of these things. But
Dan, you're so sheltered.
Speaking of podcasting.
That was a fascinating story, Dan. Before we roll into this, next party.
Before we roll into this, can I point out that on this list of things we're going to talk about here.
On the big board.
On the big board, 2 generally follows 1, and then 2.05 generally follows 2.
Mm-hmm.
So when I clarified the order in the beginning. And then we didn't go with that order. That's where the confusion was in the beginning. I'd like to point that out.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. That's very true.
I think our flow is just fine there.
Actually, in fact, we haven't even hit 1 yet. We started at 2.1.
Yes, I know.
Basically, what they're looking at is the big board, and we were doing a sort of brainstorming session of what we're going to talk about today. And we were brainstorming it, and then we put it in order, but instead of erasing the points
and renumbered them.
We just...
No, there's an arrow.
Renumbered them, and... Yeah, there's
right,
arrows.
We're swimming upstream here, so let's move on to the next one, which was before the previous one, but... Time travel and podcasts now. We wanted to talk about the position that podcasting has within the gaming world, and talk a little about market penetration. Let me explain kind of why we're talking. Yeah, no, he said penetration. Come on, girls.
I told you in the beginning. I knew we'd get it on the board someday.
So, the market penetration of podcasts. All right. We, after looking over podcasting in general, are of the opinion that the biggest thing that's holding back gaming podcasts in general is the fact that we have a certain set of people listening to these podcasts, but the majority of new listeners that come into a podcast in a week are not people that are gamers who picked up podcasting, but are typically listeners of another podcast or just cross-pollinating to whatever the latest thing is on podcasting, which is where we know we got a lot of our listeners. Well, the thing about that is this is obviously a relatively finite market. And if you look at the market of people that play role-playing games versus the number of people that listen to podcasts, you do a little Venn diagram where those overlap.
That is your favorite word.
What, Venn diagram?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've used like once before on a podcast.
More than once.
But that overlap is relatively small. And so something that we are right now trying to launch some efforts to do is to draw in some of these people that are gamers that have never picked up podcasting before. And we've done that by putting flyers in local gaming shops. We're slated to do panels and interviews at a coming con to try and get some new people.
Did some Google ads. But, do we still do Google ads?
Yeah, we're still running Google ads. But if there's anything that you, the listeners, can do to help this effort, this would be something that'd benefit all of us. And the obviously benefits us by drawing in new listeners. Mm-hmm. But it also benefits you because another podcaster pointed out to me that throughout the 80s and 90s, there was an important role that the gaming magazine played in the role-playing market, that it told you about products, it brought the community together, it gave the fans an opportunity to speak out on what they thought about various games and such. And when those magazines largely disappeared or went downhill, that kind of left a void that's now being filled by podcasts. And they can point out several games, mostly independent games, that have been made successful purely because of podcasting. Mm-hmm. And also how existing products have been modified by community feedback through podcasting. So while bringing in new listeners from the outside helps us grow, it also helps the gaming market as a whole improve in terms of its unification and its quality. So if there's anything you guys can do to say to your gaming buddies, hey, you ought to check out a podcast, whether it's ours or someone else's, this is something that we'd really like to beseech you to take the 5 minutes at your next gaming session to do. Or the next time you're up at your hobby shop talking to the guy that runs it, you know, say a few words to him or stick up a little flyer or something. Mm.
We were all just kind of listening to you. You had this flow going, and then you stopped, and then you were waiting for someone else to take over. We're like,
well, you could have at least, you know, hallelujah or something like that. And
praise Jesus.
Huh. Yeah, Dan, you're right.
I really don't have anything else to add, Dan.
Agreed.
So there.
/ agree.
All right. Well, that was episode whatever episode this is. We'll see you later.
Let's get into some meaty gaming topics now. This is going to be a real clean transition. So, yeah. Gaming topic. What we're going to talk about today is dealing with evil in your campaign, or specifically within your group of characters. And
contained evil.
We are not talking here specifically about alignment, but you could put this obviously in context of alignment. We're not talking about the mechanic of alignment and whether it works or doesn't work. We did that in a previous episode. It's a topic that's been kind of done to death in the RP market in general.
The horse is dead.
Yeah. But what we're talking about here, and let's use the alignment example just to make this clear as day. Let's say you have within D&D a party, four guys, three of them are all some kind of good, lawful good, neutral good, and one guy wants to play that thief that's neutral evil.
Huh. Put him right next
to
the paladin.
We're not pointing at anyone here.
I say, hey, let him, and tell him to roll up a backup.
All right, well, let's talk about. I want to talk about this from a couple angles. That's angle one. Angle two is the reverse. What if you have, for some reason, an evil party where someone wants to play a good character, or we could put this in the broader term of running an entire evil party through a campaign. It seems like within role-playing, while the stereotypical character is chaotic neutral, just kind of does whatever he wants.
Well, that's the easiest way.
The stereotypical party is always the bunch of heroes. Mm-hmm. That there's a dragon threatening the maiden, go kill the dragon. Generally good act. You may do some crooked things along the way, sure. Pick some pockets or whatever. Yeah, but you're generally working towards a good end ultimately down the road.
Yeah.
So, once again, we're not talking about alignment. I just keep mentioning alignment because we need some kind of a common language here we can speak while we're talking about this. An evil character in a good party.
Chad, an evil character in a good party.
Have you ever run a game where the party is fundamentally good, but one guy either insisted on playing an evil character or played a character who quickly became evil?
Yeah, several times. Several times. I think it works. You have to have a level of competition or hostility.
Real briefly, what was the setup? No huge details, but just real briefly, what was the setup of the group?
Well, we were playing a cyberpunk type game, and not Shadowrun, but yeah, cyberpunk type game, and everybody was playing different types of
Characters.
Characters. I don't want to go into huge detail. I could like list all of what they were playing, but that'd be boring. Stuff. Yeah.
They weren't playing people. That's the important part.
They were playing human beings.
Alright, and what was their general goal? What were they generally trying to accomplish in this game?
To live life. Okay, and when they started out, it was just like they had a business, and Adam had a business, and the other people were his employees, and it was just sort of living life, and then I was going to create a situation, and they were going to interact with it.
So basically, every day, we're all no good people.
Right. Except for one character, and that was John, and he played an artificial intelligence. The hard part for me was to get the two people, to get the two groups together, to get John and these people together, because they had nothing in common whatsoever. And so I had this yada, 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 things happened, and they were going to, like, take John. But John played it from the perspective of self-preservation. And I, Seeley, all these other groups were trying to get him, and he didn't know who was good and who was bad, and he didn't care. He defended himself from all the groups, including our heroes. And basically, it was such an interesting situation that I had never dealt with. I eventually just swept the other groups aside and concentrated on John, the player, versus my other players. And it was so cool. Basically, one of my other players was playing the bad guy, trying to kill these guys. And they were trying to stop him from killing them, basically, and trying to handle the situation.
This is probably an extreme result of it, because I guess that you can also have the good party with an evil character where they're not, that doesn't result in a break, where effectively the evil character almost becomes a GM tool.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he wasn't a GM tool. He was reacting separate from
me. It strikes me that in the case of something that extreme, that this is probably going to be cool for a while, but eventually campaign
killer. That's exactly what happened. This was the one of the top five games I have ever been involved in, and it was wonderful, except you can't maintain it forever. If you try to maintain something like that forever, it turns into X-Men. It turns into 30 years of nobody dying, even though they're in incredibly dangerous situations where people should be dying left and right, and it gets corny. But we played it out. We played it out kind of to its end, and it only lasted for, what, like 3 months or something, if that?
It wasn't long. It was good.
I guess let me use a word other than alignment here, just because I don't want people thinking purely within the D20 paradigm or D&D paradigm.
Well, I wouldn't consider that story to be an alignment-based story, because neither side was playing good nor evil.
But we're talking about, I guess, really characters that have a radical division either in morality or in goal. But here we're talking, I guess, really more about the morality.
So you're
aspect.
Talking about a party of popes and cardinals partying up with Dr. Mengele.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe not so...
Oh my God, we're playing this game every podcast.
Maybe not that corny, cheesy,
maybe not that
cartoonish. I'm talking the level of...
Well, let's say, for example...
Good and evil.
We have a... And let's put this, let's say, within... Let's take Star Trek, okay? Yeah. Just for something completely non-D&D. And we are playing people that are the crew of a spaceship, okay? Mm-hmm. And we're all relatively loyal to the Federation, basically good people looking to solve the mysteries and defeat the Klingons and all this kind of stuff. And then there's that one guy who's antisocial, hates the Federation, would blow up the ship if he had the chance.
We call him the bitch.
Yeah. And this would be a Star Trek example. I guess it was like in D&D, you could have like a party of clerics and paladins and loyal knights. And then there's that one cleric of the Dark God. Yeah. Or that one rogue, or that one murderous knight, or whatever that's in there.
The assassin.
Whatnot. And I think if this degrades to the point of infighting, it's an interesting topic, but it's probably a different topic. Mm-hmm. But I personally don't allow this type of thing in my game, because it never works out. But
it worked out for us.
No, it doesn't.
Once again, you had a couple good games, and it killed the campaign.
It doesn't ever work out for us.
Yeah, it didn't kill. I wouldn't say it killed the campaign.
It shortened the lifespan of the campaign.
Yeah.
It made it good, but short. But as you said, you had to sweep away everything else that you had.
Which was no problem for me, because I only think of things 20 minutes ahead of time anyway.
Yeah.
So.
I guess in that case, where it goes to infighting, you also create a new problem, which is you now have a forever divided party. It's the same as if half the party goes right and half goes left. You now have to GM two groups of unrelated people.
I will say that this is not something that I would want to do all the time or even ever again.
All right, let's take the generic D&D example, just to keep things kind of easy to talk about. Let's say we have a party of adventurers going out to slay the dragon on behalf of the king, and along with them comes that cleric of Bane.
Right.
Some just hideously evil cleric. And,
excuse me, Molly, go kill these children.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, maybe not once again. Maybe
guys,
not so
I can take this dragon, but I got to kill 30 orphans to power up.
I mean, maybe not so cartoonishly over the top. But.
Weighing the scale. Yeah.
The dragon does need killing.
Yeah, and he's going to kill 500 people. That's 30 orphans.
Have you ever had something like the hat bar? Where it's not an infight. Everyone's going the same direction. But you just have one person. They're all working towards the same end, slaying the dragon. Mm. But one guy, one group of people has some kind of moral standard. One group of people has no moral standard.
We kind of hit that with Adam's character in a couple of our D&D games. He had a recurring character named, when he finally started naming his characters.
No, this was before I stopped naming my characters.
Yeah. Tulio the Jackass. This character is actually really cool. He was a rogue. He was a jackass. He was rude, he was uncouth, he was not a good guy.
No.
Yeah, he was a wanted man. He almost got hung a couple times, and the party was actually like, should we save him? We need him, but then again, nobody likes him. He did do all these bad things.
We really don't like him.
Yeah, and so it was interesting, you know, in that regard.
Did it work? Campaign-wise, did it work?
Yes. Yes, it did.
It did, but...
Because the it's like... The reasonings for what each of the people did was different, but all of their motivations were the same. Because the problems I threw at them were bigger than them. Tulio was 3 points evil, but the problem I was throwing at them was 15-point evil. So, who cares how evil Tulio is? He's coming along to help us, and he's not murdering 30 children to power up. You know, he's just a thief and a murderer, and... I think a rapist, too.
So this is kind of like the help
that... I was never convicted.
So this is kind of along the lines of like the help that organized crime provided in fighting the Nazis.
Yeah. But not that extreme, but yeah, that's...
On a smaller scale.
On a very, very much smaller scale.
All right, let's turn this into some kind of a meaningful...
I would want to interject, too. If you continued the campaign and you defeated the 16-point evil, and there was no evil, and it was like we were role-playing going back to town in celebration, and we're going to build a castle and all that, then the character might have become a problem because the motivations of the character and the motivations of the other party would be different, but now that they're connected, and so that there would be a tension, which I think would be really cool. But we never got that far in the campaign.
All right, well, let's turn this into some meaningful advice. Let's say that we're sitting around a table, and the four of us are playing a game, and one of us decides to roll up a character whose goals and motivations are morally radically different than the rest of the party. My advice, number one, is I would put this kind of in the same category that I do freak show characters. I would allow it. I'm not saying out of hand it's a bad idea, but I would be highly skeptical of it because it has so much potential to divide the party, generate infighting, and eventually break the game. And so I think also you'd have real trouble if you take the group template thing seriously. You would have real trouble demonstrating how this person is organically and meaningfully integrated into the party. But over the long haul of time, people that have horridly different moralities eventually tend to fall out from each other just because they go separate ways in life.
See, that's what I think is that it's not a matter of the morality, though. I think the morality becomes issues. But I think it's a matter of motivation. Are all of the players' motivations the same? Because you could have two guys who are really, really good. They're lawful good.
Right.
But they follow totally different gods who are diametrically opposed to each other. The goal that they are trying to reach, their gods require them to reach it in different ways. Like one guy must take the villain alive. And he must be imprisoned because killing is wrong. And the other guy is like... Justice must be served. We have to kill the guy.
You know, I guess really, and maybe the reason that I wasn't quite thinking it down those lines is because the way I see it is a game, and I know this is a GMing difference between you and I. Mm-hmm. To me, a campaign is not a plot. A campaign is many plots.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, when I set them out of the gate, if their only goal, if their only motivation is this one guy is far more evil than anything else in the world, we must eliminate him. Once he's gone, then what? There is only one consistent throughout the campaign, which is each other. And therefore, well, ultimately, on some level, your goal has to be a common loyalty, usually, to the other party members that supersedes what you're doing
moment. I have the guys make the characters before I make the campaign. So I don't think it's really that. It's not a matter of my games are, there's one goal, and then the players write themselves towards that goal, and then they do divergent goals.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, like, with your Tulio Jackass example, you hit the end of the campaign. The one thing they all agreed on is now out of the way. If you continue this campaign onto a second plot, Tulio's probably going to be coup de grace in his sleep. You know, it's going...
Now who's evil? Yeah. That's not nice.
Forgiveness.
I wasn't in this campaign, so I don't know.
So you can just sit there in your ivory tower
and
judge poor Tulio.
Then again,
clearly wasn't as interesting as Tulio, though.
Then again, you're looking at a size of scale, though. Chad typically doesn't write epic campaigns.
Right.
Well, that's exactly what I just said, that it's a difference in the approach to what a campaign is.
Yeah, exactly.
That, to me, a campaign is ultimately a series of related stories about a group of people. And therefore, there has to be something that binds them together supersedes what's going on in the world.
See, I don't want to do story after story after story after story with the same characters. I want to ultimately have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And you can do, with the same characters, a new beginning, a new middle, and a new end. I mean, it sounds like those are separate plots, right, like what you're saying, but it's hard for me to explain. Like, what I mean by it is that the whole feel of the campaign would be different for the second beginning, middle, and end. It would almost be as if you're playing a new game with these same characters. That's what I would want. That's how I run.
All right, so I guess then maybe we should try and give this as advice for the two different GMing styles. Mm-hmm. So if you play more of a cellular game, which is kind of what you're describing, and whether you agree with the exact word choice, generally along those lines, would you say that the best advice you can give to make a morally diverse, for lack of a better phrase, party work is to make sure they have some kind of an external goal that supersedes their issues of the moment with each other?
No.
Okay, how would you explain
it? What I would say is that when we're all making characters, we're sitting around, and one of the guys comes up and says, okay, I got this, and it's divergent from the other players, we have to sit around and talk about, yes, you're different, but will you walk down the road with these people? Will these other people want to harm you? Will you want to harm them?
To me, that's the bigger problem, is will the party walk down the road with him?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was getting to. Will they walk down? Will everybody, person A can hate person B. I don't care. As long as they go down the road of my story.
You know what? It gets to the point where if this situation occurs, where you know how you have your suspension of disbelief, if you have to get into a situation where you need a suspension of in character, it's not going to work.
I guess then, you know, maybe that what we're coming back to here is that the differences between GMing style aside, both of us seem to agree that really, like most character problems, this is one that you have to deal with at the group template.
Right.
That at the group template, you got to say, look, is this guy going to get along with the party? Is the party going to get along with this guy? If not, toss him out.
Yeah. And I'm playing a rogue who's a wanted man who murdered somebody and doesn't have a problem with murdering other people, but I'm an adventurer, and I'll go along with you guys, and I agree with everything you're doing, and I'd never hurt any of my friends.
Right.
The other guy is playing a paladin who must bring the justice of death upon anybody who is evil for anything they've ever done.
Actually, I think in 3rd edition there's a rule that they can't party with anybody less
than
neutral.
Well, let's not even say it's D&D. Let's say it's just insert generic fantasy game here that isn't D&D.
Right.
You know, and
let's say it's Star Wars and you're playing a Jedi along with a guy who's a thief and a smuggler.
I would look at those guys, and if they couldn't get away, if either one couldn't get away from those concepts, right, I would look at one of them and say, either the evil guy, you have to change your character, or the good guy, you have to change your character, because you cannot be in the same party together.
You know, another real problem you got to watch out for there as well is you have to be sure the group template is real, because I have seen this problem scaled through deception. No, I'm sorry. There was a game we played of, we mentioned in a previous podcast that we had created in-house a Transformers rule system. Mm-hmm. And we were playing a game of Transformers where we had a group template going, And everyone in the party was just these kind of, you know, relative independents that were all kind of friends and had similar goals. But my older brother, who at the time was still living in St. Louis, he was playing someone who was on the surface good buddies with us. In fact, we had no, and we as players honestly did not know until he stabbed us in the back at the end of the campaign. This wasn't true, but he had told the GM under the table, well, I'm actually a Decepticon loyalist who's like infiltrating these people for our own ends. And
I don't like it.
And we reached the end of the game, and all of a sudden, we reach whatever it is we were after, the alien device, or I don't remember what, I'm just making something up. We have it in our hands, we turn our backs for 3 seconds, he takes it and flies it off to Megatron.
Yeah.
This doesn't work. That's not a real group template.
Well, and you know what the problem
with that... And similarly,
the
rogue who behaves himself in front of the paladin is also not going to work, because this is still a fake group template. Well,
unless everybody's in on it. See, I don't like the idea that the guy went to the GM and nobody else knew and nobody else could arrange characters around. Because you know why? At the end of it, it was a letdown. It wasn't cool. People didn't have fun. Stupid idea. Now, if you have the idea
where... It makes
for
a good story.
Well, it makes for a good story. It makes for a boring story
party. After the fact,
you
weren't playing.
Yeah.
I actually think she was playing. I don't remember for sure.
I think
you might have been playing.
I don't remember playing with Tex, though.
Huh. Maybe we're there for that one, but go on, Chad.
Well, but if you take, like, the paladin and the rogue's evil and the paladin's good, all that sort of stuff, and everybody knows, like, the players all talk about how they want to have this tension where this paladin is seeking out injustice, and the rogue knows it, and he is injustice, and he hides it, and he does things behind the paladin's back, not necessarily to harm the party, but just...
You just
they
have to
write it in as an interplay between the characters.
You just have
everybody's
to be sure to
in on it.
Take this out all the way. That when you're working out the groom template, what if the paladin happens to see it? At that point,
you definitely have to set up rules.
You know, is the paladin going to drag him off to the town magistrate to be have his thumbs cut off? Or
are players,
they friends where they might supersede that?
And, if you do this in your game, you have to talk about it. You have to talk about things before you start playing the game. Like, okay, the thief is conning the paladin, and he screws up. And the paladin discovers him mid-game, and I see the paladin's like, well, I have to kill him. What do you do? You have to make an agreement where maybe the rogue says, okay, you finally got me. Bam, and he's dead, and he rolls up a new character, and everybody's cool with it. Or work in Deus Ex Machina to, you know, keep that going.
Right. I think really, at least on the first half of this topic, because we still have a few other issues to cover here, but it sounds like on the first half of this topic, evil characters in a good party and good characters in an evil party, the big thing that we're getting out of this, and hopefully we're giving you out of this, is
don't
just...
Don't do it!
Well, no, not a don't
no,
do
I
it.
I don't think that at
but
all.
But just a heavy, heavy reinforcement of the importance of that group template.
Yeah.
That if you are going to make this work, and I think like Freak Show characters, this can work. It can be cool, but there are a lot of dangers in doing it. Because I have seen this time and again, kill campaigns and cause piss off outside of the game, like person versus person tension. You have got to work this out in honesty and in earnestness when you are creating that group template.
And it's really hard, I think, for a lot of people to do that because the character you create before the game starts is always different than the character that you're playing 10 games in. Because you always add in more development and, well, basically you develop the character as you're playing.
Well, that's because you don't know what the character is going to do in a situation until they run into that situation.
Right. So it's hard to talk about these things.
Yeah, and it takes a certain amount of paranoia because you could have, going back to our paladin and our thief, the paladin and the thief have basically said, okay, there's going to be this tension. It's going to go on a little bit behind the scenes. But then in one of the games, the thief steals the crown of the king to whom the paladin is sworn unto death to protect.
Mm-hmm. And it was an IC move on thief's part.
But this to the paladin is a disgrace that we don't really have an equivalence for in the 21st century that requires a massive response above and beyond petty theft or even grand larceny. You know,
Over the course of the next three games, you are either going to have the greatest ending to your campaign ever, or the players will be able to deal with it and move on.
Right. So I think you really got to think this out. You've really got to think out the fact that this can go farther, deeper, worse, longer than you ever expected it to go.
Personally, I am all for it because even though it has screwed up my games, And even though it does cause problems and all this is true, the coolness that I have gotten from it out of games, you just can't get that any other way. It's this certain thing. It puts a certain spin on the campaign.
Well, it comes down to conflict.
It does.
It's well, like and if you don't have conflict, you don't have interest.
That's exactly it. There are very few books written where you have a group of characters being happy and getting along, and they all meet at the house, and they all play cards, and then they go home, and it's 300 pages of this. No, the interesting comes in when one guy's sleeping with the other guy's wife.
I guess you know, so.
See, this is a difference in GMing style game, because I guess the difference is the way that my games tend to go down is...
Yeah, everybody loves each other in your games.
Have you ever... Okay, think of it this way. People are together in a disaster situation. A boat sank in, they're all trapped on it.
No, a zombie invasion.
Okay, a zombie invasion, fine.
At a mall.
Right, at a mall. All right, so like, you know...
Where the power never gets turned off.
I was just watching CNN about a zombie invasion at the mall.
Oh my God. Where?
You get a group of people who have very different backgrounds, very different morality, but they're in a situation that is so dangerous and so overwhelming that even though there may be that tension there, and if they talk about it, there may be that amount of disagreement, that ultimately it's not what the situation's about because nobody has time for it.
It's like I said with the Tullio thing. Tullio was 3 evil. The thing they were going up with was 15 evil. Nobody cared about Tullio's 3 evil. You know, and that's the thing, too. It's like the morality or the situation. The tension is at 3. The situation's at 20.
And I guess that's kind of what I'm saying is, you know, when you're surrounded by zombies on a sinking ship at the mall,
everybody's blast.
You don't need to be sleeping with somebody's wife to create that kind of tension that you're looking for, that kind of dramatic,
I know.
I don't know, though. What was that movie? It was a recent zombie movie. It was a remake, and they're at a mall, and the security guards is Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, it was Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah. And in that one, zombies are attacking, things are going crazy, and at the group of humans, you have bad guys doing bad things.
Right.
The original Night of the Living Dead, you had asshole characters. They were all trapped in a house. Zombies were coming to eat them. You had guys in there doing bad things to make the situation worse. I don't necessarily think that would work in a role-playing game, but
we don't want to torture this analogy, because at that point I'd say, well, you're not talking about NPCs, not players, because these are ultimately someone that the party has to bag and overcome.
Yeah, the zombies got them.
Well, point being, the plot has to eat them somehow.
But
I don't want to torture the analogy. All right, let's put that one aside. I think generally the consensus we've come to is you've got to tailor this a little bit to the drama tolerance of your group and playing styles.
It's the tolerance level of your group to conflict, to internal conflict. It is the GMing style of the GM, and it's the tolerance level of the GM, because the GM, when you start adding inter-party conflict, the conflict level always escalates. It always goes up, and it's not the player's job to make it go down. It's the GM's job to rein it in and make it go down.
Well, I'd even say more than that. It's the job of the gaming group as a whole to start off in a position where it is not likely going to spin out of control.
Right.
But it sounds like, as we keep saying, it's really a group template issue. So let's move on to a little bit of a different topic. Evil parties as a whole.
Everybody's turning and looking at the big board.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Just
3A, evil
a
parties.
A becomes before B.
Oh, not my alphabet.
Yeah, just like 2.1 comes before 1.
In my alphabet, E comes after F, A comes after E, R comes after A.
I got my back to this travesty, so...
All right. Evil parties. Now, here's what I want to talk about. Within my other gaming group, we have a couple times talked about trying to play a game with an evil party. And I don't mean just completely out of control, anything that walks in their path. Because this is just...
The cliche evil.
Right. I mean, that's just... Yeah. It's scary.
What's our mission? Burn babies. How are we going to do it? Evil fire.
Burning
exactly.
Baby.
You rob everything in your path and mug everyone
you know
see.
What? I need 3,000 experience points, and each peasant is worth 1 experience point, and there's 3,000 peasants in that village. The possibilities are endless. Yeah,
Middle Ages math.
The shopkeeper only sold me the sword for half off. I kill him and take the sword and kill his wife and burn down his shop. I'm not talking about that. We were talking about playing a game where we were going to be much more nuanced, much more quote-unquote human than that, but ultimately everyone had some kind of an evil alignment and was some sort of a crooked concept, you know, necromancer, a vampire, whatever. And we actually had a problem ever getting this game to work.
I played a chaotic good necromancer.
I played a chaotic neutral.
Your necromancer was awesome.
That's a completely different story. But the problem we always had getting this to work was we could not create a game about evil characters that was interesting, because all we could ever come up with that motivated them was ultimately some kind of power.
Really? No money?
Money's power. Yeah. What do you do with
money? Look at Batman.
Yeah. If you're an evil character,
I'm correct.
If you're an evil character and I give you all the gold you want, what do you do with it? You buy henchmen.
I'm a dragon and I hoard it. And I eat hobbits who come to try and take it.
You lay on it because it's soft.
But, you know, ultimately, money's power.
Yeah.
Magic's power. Killing people's power. And all we could come up with was that it was always about the power. That if there's like a dragon that's threatening the town, if you're a genuinely evil person, you don't really care. It's not your problem. Except maybe the dragon's in on your turf, which once again is back to power.
Well, see, then that's when you turn it into where the evil players want power as far as political power. Because with political power, you can make that a lot of plot. Money, who cares? The bad guys get paid again. You know, it's a job. We work jobs. When you have an evil party, man, make them nobles, make them politicians, put them in positions to where they want power over other people.
Well, I guess what I was going to say was this, that if you create the generic bunch of good guys, there's a surface cartoony good that really doesn't stand up to scrutiny or nuance, but you can still create a diverse bunch of objectives and reasons and motivations to a good party. It's not just one line item of power. I've got to think that maybe in my case, this is just, I don't know, in this one area, lack of imagination or something, but there's got to be a way you can create an evil party and actually run an interesting game where the goal is not power, where they are after something else.
Sex?
Well, I guess once again, you could argue power.
Well, you could play Call of Cthulhu and have them be, you know, the minions of one of the, you know, elder gods or something.
Yeah, but what's the elder god after?
But think still, of
power and domination.
The thing is, how far are you boiling this down? You're not playing the elder god, though.
I
think you're boiling it down too much, too. You could say that the entire motivation for a good party would be to do good things.
But see, that's a category. That's not like they're all after money.
So it's power.
Because I'd say the equivalent is this. Let's say in good characters, you said they're all after eternal salvation. And if that was your one and only motivation for good characters, I'd say now you have something that's as specific as power. You want the ability to control others and things around you. It's the one thing that evil characters always seem to be after.
You could also say that of good players, too, but...
Well, I don't think so.
Not all good players. I mean, you could say that you could have the judge who wants to control all players around them for the greater good.
Right.
You know, but that's a different argument.
But then you could also have the humble, self-sacrificing servant who's not interested in that, who's after something else. You know, you get the guy out there who's trying to redeem his brother morally. You get the guy out there who is seeking eternal salvation. You get the guy out there who's seeking to defend the town and the people in it.
You could have the evil guy who's like...
Yeah, boil it down to this. They're just trying to satisfy some goal that just happens to be good.
Yeah.
That's all that good characters are. They're just looking for that satisfaction of some goal.
Yeah.
That just happens to be good.
What's the purpose of their satisfaction?
Well, why are they trying to attain it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Why are we boiling everything down to power?
Why are evil people trying to obtain power? Why are they doing that? What kind of power is it? Because, I mean, when you start saying, it's like, well, you can't include lust into that because lust is just power over another person. And, okay, you know, it's like, well, where does it stop?
Well, what about revenge? Revenge isn't a power thing. It's the satisfaction of some goal that happens to be evil.
Yeah.
Which is done through power, through killing another individual.
Now you're confusing the end with the medium.
I want to save the orphans, because saving the orphans is a good thing. By overpowering the guy who's killing him.
Okay, all right, but revenge, I think, in this case, I don't think you've got a viable game, because now you've got a quest game.
Well, once
game.
You kill the one
once
guy,
once you kill
it's
the
done.
One guy, you're done. And I'd say that you don't have a viable ongoing game.
Think back of all the villains you can think of through any story you want. Boil it all down to power. Can you? Can you come up with another motivation
Depends
for an evil
how,
character?
Depends on how three-dimensional the character
also,
was in the first
I think
place.
About the, I think about the games that I try and run, and the villains that I put into it. Because my big thing is, I want to blur the line between the player's perception of good and evil. I want to have the magistrate of the town who's oppressing and taxing the town, and the players come up and they're going to stop him and they're going to stop the oppression, and then that they learn that there's something greater going on. He has to squeeze the taxes out of this town to pay for the army that's defending them from the evil orcs. Okay, we're going to fight the evil orcs. Well, you go and you confront the orcs and you find out that the town, the humans, are encroaching on their land. So you go back to like, well, we're going to fight the humans who are encroaching on their lands. And then you find out it's like, well, you know, we are encroaching on their lands, but we're spreading and we have to go somewhere. And we try to live peacefully, but the culture of the orcs was different. Right. And they're violent. And I agree with you on this.
And this is kind of, I guess, in a sense, what we ultimately came up with as a conclusion out of this is that when you take these kind of fairy tale visions of good and evil, that it becomes very, very hard to play a consistently evil campaign, because ultimately, once again, if you remain within that fairy tale realm of your pure evil, all you're after is generic power. You want to rule the kingdom, get the most powerful spell, live forever, whatever. But if you play something that is much more of a nuanced vision of evil, mm-hmm. for example, I watch a lot of History Channel, and I've watched several specials on, and I've also read a lot about the lies of, like, the inner circle of the Nazis, like Hitler and Goering and all those. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of talk about the seeming contradiction in these men, where these were people that did these heinous, horrible, and evil things.
Yeah.
But then you sit down and watch these whole movies of them
playing with their children.
You know, where Hitler's sitting there bouncing a niece or nephew on his leg. Or, you know, you see Himmler or Goering or whatever out there playing with the children, and it's just this complete paradox that these people who were doing these terrible, terrible, terrible things are not just these unnuanced Diablo Deville monsters. Mm-hmm. They are not fairy tale Sauron bad guys. And I guess that's kind of really what we walked away with from it, is that we couldn't come up with a good campaign for something that's just kind of straight flat evil.
Well, and think about games where you're supposed to play evil, like Vampire the Masquerade. Vampire the Masquerade, from its creators, the guy said, this game is a study in evil. You can play really deep Vampire the Masquerade games. Aren't necessarily based on power. They're based on conflicts with people. Now, the people you're conflicting with could be good, and the people you're conflicting with could be evil. It's what's your motivation.
Right.
You know, and I think that's what it gets down to, is just your overall motivation.
And I guess maybe that's kind of a nuance that I maybe did not bring out sufficiently when I first brought this up. In fact, if I'm guessing, I'm probably some feedback on this, I'm going to direct right back to this point in the podcast, which is that...
mark the time!
Yeah, might as well mark the times. I know somebody's going to try and call me on this and be like, did you listen to the podcast all the way through? When I talked about an evil party, I was very much talking about a party that is truly evil.
The classic evil
bad guy.
Yeah.
The lich who is out there. You know, Sauron, what does he want? He wants to rule the world. What did Hitler want? He wants to rule the world. It's always about power versus something like, let's take a Vampire the Masquerade character. You could play a guy who doesn't want to be the prince of the city. Right. You could play a guy who's happy at his little place in the hierarchy of vampires, whatever that may be, who just did this because he's afraid of death, and who, despite that, has all these motivations where he's manipulating politicians and such to protect the masquerade, but... you know, he's not quite out there just for raw blanket power. And yeah, I realize you need power to accomplish those ends, just as someone who's good needs some kind of power to accomplish their ends. But there's more of a nuance to it, kind of a Nazi inner circle type nuance to what they're doing.
I think the problem with this is also people are trying to play good characters or evil characters. And you know what? Life isn't like that.
No, it's not.
You know, role-playing games do two things. They simulate life and they simulate a story. And that's where the conflict comes in. In life, you have people who have nuances, people who are good people who do good things and that fall and make mistakes and do evil things.
Right, exactly.
And repent or not repent and go on and on and on. And role-playing games try to simulate that. And they try and simulate a story. And in story, you have good guys, you have bad guys, you have good guys who stumble and fall, but ultimately rise up.
And you have guys.
Yeah.
Just generic guys.
Yeah, just guys who are neutral.
They're just guys.
Yeah.
Well, I think the big thing with the evil characters is when you say, I am playing an evil character, you don't play a character who does evil things. You play this guy, and every situation, you have to say, how do I look at this situation evilly?
Mm-hmm.
And not how I would actually react to the situation.
What?
That's the big fault.
That was a cool thing. I'm sorry to keep stroking you like this, Ann, but that was a cool thing about Tullio the Jackass.
Yes.
Is he was a bad guy, his motivations were evil, the party was going to do good, and he was like, and we were like, Tullio, time to do this good thing. And you're just like internally conflicted. And he's like, oh, I don't want to do this, but there's something inside of me that's making me do the right thing. And I am going to go and charge into the face of danger, which is something I do not do because I'm evil and a coward, but I'm driven to do the right thing. And it was neat. It was this neat conflict within him that I observed. I don't know if you intentionally played that or not.
Of course, you've got some people who just, you know, they take evil characters just so they can cause trouble. But
yeah.
It's like, how can I cause trouble in this scene?
Yes,
and that's a bad player.
That's the slant that you look at how do I be evil here?
I have run into that as well. Yes. There was a guy we used to game with a long time ago who had a whole lot of antisocial impulses. He would act those out through the game.
Yeah.
That his characters were always belligerently evil and just completely...
He was trying.
Yeah.
It was like he was an evil poser.
Oh. And that's...
So I live my life in evil, and my character's evil, and I wear black jeans and black t-shirts, and I'm so evil! It's like, dude... You're going to get a smacking you ain't going to soon forget.
So I guess...
All right. Sorry.
It's getting heavy in here.
A little bit of angst there.
It's getting thick.
Excuse me.
In fact, I think after that round of angst, we may be talking about two different people.
Sorry.
Yeah, I don't even know what we're talking about anymore. What time is it?
I agree with you, though. And like I said, that was kind of the conclusion we came to, was that playing a group that has that kind of fairy tale evil doesn't work. You have to play something that's a little more nuanced, because we see, I think, more readily the nuance in good. Mm-hmm. We see the diverse motivations. We see the fact that good people make mistakes, or maybe even are being good because they're redeeming a mistake.
You know why that is? Is because people are inherently good. Think about every single person you know. How many of them are perfectly willing to walk into an elementary school and start blasting? None. I don't know anybody like that.
I get into a debate on the definition of good there, is I think not doing evil is not a sufficient... But I don't want to get into this.
How many of them are willing to not go into the grocery store, you know, and steal a pack of gum? That's a lot simpler.
No, I agree with Dan on this one.
I put it more like, how many of those same people, if the guy in front of them can't afford the food, would give them a 20 to finish paying for it? Not knowing the person's status is not like, oh, you know, they're starving to death and they'll die, but just to be good would help the person in front of them they don't know with a $20
bill. The problem with these situations is that you put the burden on either being good or being evil.
Right, I know. That's what I'm saying, is I think it's a lot more. But I don't want to get into this, because this is not a philosophy podcast. This is a role-playing podcast. But,
no!
Anyway, I think that's about it.
Fear the nature of good.
What about the contest?
Oh, you know what?
Oh, no, you know what? That was number one.
I know. This will be a bonus for people that made it to the end of this.
Can we do the contest? Oh, my God, a stealth contest.
Should we do the stealth contest or save it for the next
one? This is going to be a stealth contest.
All right, here's the stealth contest.
Should put it in the middle.
Only you assholes who actually get to the end of this podcast.
This works, too, because this, our last contest we announced at the start of the podcast, this one is the reverse of our first contest, and it's also being announced at the end.
No, you screwed up. Just a minute.
Oh, no. This was quite intentional. All right. Here's the contest. This is another character creation contest, like our Freak Show character contest. 500 words or less. Once again, we'll start a thread in our contest topic in the forums. I want you to post by noon on Saturday, September the 30th. 500 words or less. A super normal character. All right. If we look at the D&D's Player's Handbook, there is a certain amount of character types that are so freak show they're not in the character they're not in the manual, like the dragon knight or whatever.
This is going to sound weird. We want you guys to make the most interesting peasant you can.
Exactly. We want something that is so normal it is to the other side of the player's handbook.
Secretary you've ever made.
By normal, I don't mean fighter, paladin, monk, Jedi, starfighter, pilot. I don't mean any of that. By normal, I mean secretary, garbage man,
and we
farmer.
Don't, and what we don't mean secretary by day, killer by night.
We mean slaughterer of innocents by night.
I want to explain the point of this contest is I have worked with a lot of people in games where they've put to me some kind of a freaky character concept. I've been like, look, why don't you play something a little more normal? And they say, well, because I want my character to be interesting. And what I always retort at is this. Look around the table. You're sitting with a whole bunch of people. Every one of them is interesting. None of them are dragon wizards. Interesting.
You are.
Well, interesting.
Here's a question, too. Does the character have to be human?
I would say no. I would say no, provided whatever character you're creating is normal to their environment. So an elf in 20th century Earth, yes, is a freak show character.
Yeah.
An elf in D&D, if you want to make an elven trash man in D&D, I guess that's really not that freak show.
Whoa.
I think an elven trash man in D&D is a kind of freak show.
Well, maybe. But you get the idea.
The elven rubbish collector.
All right, the point we're trying to make with this contest is we want you guys to reach deep and to make characters that are interesting for a reason that has nothing to do with their template. They're not interesting because they're knights or dragons or wizards or intellectual cucumbers or whatever. They're interesting just because they're interesting people.
Zombie intellectual cucumbers.
All right, so on that visual...
He's got a PhD in lying around.
The sea cucumber or just a regular?
No, that's way too smart.
Well, all right, but I guess we will end this one here. So you guys take care until next time.
See ya.
Yeah.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2006, fully owned by its host. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in this show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.